Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Now, 104.5 The Zone's non-stop sports talk continues with a look at Nashville's teams and at news around the nation from the lead writer of 104.5thezone.com. This is
The Big Six.
The Big Six with Jason Martin.
And here we go.
Straight up, 6 o'clock by my watch means it's time for the one and only Big Six here on 104.5 The Zone. Glad to have you with us. Thank you for joining me. I'm Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. Our telephone number tonight, as every night, is 615-737-1045. 737-1045. Ryan Mudd behind the glass, spinning the dials radio style for me tonight. I am, as I always say, blessed beyond measure. Hope you recognize that you are too. So there's a lot of things happening. You get in on a Monday, and you're like, what exactly are we going to talk about? And, of course, there's things happening locally. And then there's this. If you remember, there was a Friday back around the middle of the NFL season, a little bit after middle, I guess, maybe week 11 or so, where I detoured from every single one of my planned segments that night. I ended up doing nothing but talking about something that I could not believe was not wall-to-wall content on every media outlet that night. It was news that came out on that Friday afternoon. I remember it because I was at the Titans Pro Shop with Paul Kaharski filling in for the Midday 180 because Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow were calling the state championship games in high school football. And at the end of that show, the TMZ video came out about this. But that night, I suggested that probably before the night was out, Kareem Hunt would be placed on the commissioner's exempt list and his season would likely be over. And I did not understand why people were not talking about this. And I saw people on Twitter, we've got to wait until the facts come out. The facts? There was a video. So before I even make it home from that show that night, that prediction, and I can be wrong. If you follow me during the NFL playoffs, you know this. But that prediction proved true and then some. Not only was he placed on that list, the Chiefs released him because he lied to them about the incident that cost his job, basically. In February, Kareem Hunt shoved a woman and then kicked her while she was down. Now, I'm stating that as a fact because it is a fact. There is no disputing it. How do I know? The same reason I knew back on that Friday night that this was a story that needed to be talked about way more than it was, because TMZ released a video featuring hotel surveillance footage that showed every bit of it. We saw Kareem Hunt get violent. We saw him, I don't know exactly when it was, I think it was 2 or 3 in the morning, outside of this hotel room in this hallway, shove this woman and then kick her while she was down. I was very uninterested in the context of that video, because there's not any context that makes placing hands on a woman okay. I don't know how many times we need to say this, but every time these subjects arise, for some reason, defenders pop up and call radio shows. The reason I know this is because it happened to me after the Ray Rice deal back when I was hosting Sports Trim with my good friends Brandon Hagney and David Reed several years ago. And these callers would say, look, we need to find out what happened. We need to find out what this woman did because she might have deserved it. Sometimes that's all a man can do. False. It's never all a man can do unless she has a deadly weapon in hand and that weapon is loaded or actively in use. That is a ridiculous argument. It makes absolutely zero sense. And it's flat out embarrassing to anybody who's out there trying to make it. So what exactly has happened since Kareem Hunt lost his job in Kansas City? Well, the Chiefs lost to the Patriots in overtime of the AFC Championship game. But after certainly missing his contributions for a few weeks, They discovered a new back in Damian Williams that was highly effective once he became more featured as a contributor on that offense. That guy averaged 5.1 yards per carry, had 4 touchdowns, 2 more as a receiver. But again, he didn't even get on the field really until the 12th week of the season. As for Hunt, what changed for Kareem Hunt? Certainly not that video. That video is forever. Certainly not what he did. And that does bear mentioning it didn't result in charges or an arrest, but the footage would indicate it probably should have at the time. For whatever reason, it didn't. Also, 4 months later, in June of last year, Kareem Hunt was accused of punching another man in a bar. So he has issues. ESPN's report that came out on Kareem Hunt today classified him as a troubled former running back of the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, that would be a euphemistic way to put it. But there's something else that's changed for Kareem Hunt. As of today, it's his employment status. Because it was announced that the Cleveland Browns had signed Kareem Hunt to a 1-year contract. John Dorsey, who's Cleveland's general manager, used to be in Kansas City, selected Hunt in that draft, knows him, and decided, I'm going to offer him a second chance. And this is what he said. I'll just read the statement to you. My relationship and interaction with Kareem since 2016 in college was an important part of this decision-making process, but we then did extensive due diligence with many individuals, including clinical professionals, to have a better understanding of the person he is today and whether it was prudent to sign him. There were 2 important factors. One is that Kareem took full responsibility for his egregious actions and showed true remorse. And secondly, just as importantly, he is undergoing and is committed to necessary professional treatment and a plan that had been clearly laid out. I'm going to stop there, but I'm going to finish this statement in a second. The first factor that John Dorsey mentions in this statement is that Kareem took full responsibility for his egregious actions. He may have now, but the reason why the Chiefs declared that they released him originally is because he lied to them. And he even said in his own statement, I should have been more forthright about this incident, because he basically said nothing happened. So he lied to the team, showed no integrity whatsoever. But here, the 2 important factors that lead to him being back in the league this quickly for the Cleveland Browns in this case is that, one, he took full responsibility for his egregious actions and showed true remorse. Yes, he did. Once he was caught and once he was pretty much on the verge of being done. And yes, he has undergone professional treatment. That was stated. Now back to the statement. We fully understand and respect the complexity of questions and issues in signing a player with Kareem's history and do not condone his actions. Given what we know about Kareem through our extensive research, we believe he deserves a second chance, but certainly with the understanding that he has to go through critical and essential steps to become a performing member of this organization, aside from what the NFL determines from their ongoing investigation. We fully understand that Kareem is subject to discipline by the NFL. Here at the Browns, there is a detailed plan with expectations laid out that he understands and must follow, because any similar incident will not be tolerated. We will support Kareem through this process and utilize our resources, however permitted, to help him become successful on and off the field as long as he continues to show the commitment necessary to represent this organization. That from Browns general manager John Dorsey. Well, Kareem Hunt is back on an NFL roster. After being released by the Kansas City Chiefs 11 weeks into the NFL season, because a video came out that showed him violently assaulting a woman in a hotel hallway. Do you know where that hotel happens to be located? Cleveland. The very city that just decided to give Kareem Hunt his second chance. John Dorsey selected Hunt in the draft. But then last year in the NFL draft, the Browns selected Nick Chubb in the second round, and he was pretty effective. He rushed for 996 yards on 192 carries, 5.2 average, 10 total touchdowns. Duke Johnson averaged 5 yards per carry last season as well for Cleveland. One would expect Duke's probably out the door to make room for Hunt, but that's only, let's keep this in mind, if Kareem Hunt is even allowed to play. Because it's very likely, at best, he's going to be ineligible for 8 games, could miss the entire football season. The NFL has said they're nowhere near done with their investigation and the process that they're going through on Kareem Hunt. So what John Dorsey has basically decided is that Kareem Hunt is good enough to take whatever backlash comes from signing a guy less than 4 months after a video surfaced featuring that guy striking and assaulting a female in a late night hotel hallway. A Cleveland hallway. The Browns signed him. This is kind of incredible, but I guess it's really not. Because if there's one thing that's been proven over and over in sports, it's that if you're really good at sports, we're going to forgive a lot of stuff. There are a few things you can't get away with, but Kareem Hunt is a talented, versatile back, very much in the prime of his career, and that's really enticing. If he were 33, nobody's taking that chance. Ray Rice had begun to decline from his all-pro level, never got another sniff at an NFL job after showing extreme remorse repeatedly and begging teams to take a second chance on him and offer him just a chance at redemption. I want you to think of something real quick. Always think about it like this when it comes to an issue of this. If you're looking at a scale, pretend like you're looking at a scale, two sides, which one weighs more? Whichever wins determines fate. So you got Kareem Hunt shoving and booting a woman on video, a video the entire world has had the opportunity to see that will never go away, after seemingly deceiving the Kansas City Chiefs organization about that event. Or you can believe that the Chiefs did all they could to not know what was going on. Either way, he hit a woman. And then he allegedly hit a man 4 months later in a bar. That to me is like dropping a gold bar on that scale. Just a giant gold bar on that scale, right? And then there's the other side. 23 years old, and in his 2 years in the league, 16 games in 2017, 272 carries, 1,327 yards, a 4.9 yards per carry average, 11 total touchdowns. In 2018, 11 games before he was released and put on the exempt list, ending his season. 824 yards, 4.6 yards per carry, 14 total touchdowns, 7 on the ground, 7 as a receiver. Accounted for a ton of points, was instrumental in creating space for guys like Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, giving Patrick Mahomes some time and another option. So here is my question for you tonight. 615-737-1045. I got plenty to get to, but I'll take your thoughts on this. I told you that the negatives were basically a giant gold bar dropped on that scale. Such a gold bar that if you really try and picture this, if I dropped a gold bar onto the scale, that scale would like fly off the table because of the weight of the gold bar. So how much of the talent of Kareem Hunt and the numbers that I just gave you is there in this situation? Is that an equal gold bar for you? Or is that a risk you'd rather just not take? If the Tennessee Titans decided to take Kareem Hunt, how would you feel about that today? If you're good at sports, if your benefits are such, then they're going to forgive a lot of things. And what the Browns are basically banking on is that their fans want to win football games bad enough that they're going to let this thing go by the time he's eligible to play. I don't know what that says about us, quite frankly. 615-737-1045. What are your thoughts on Kareem Hunt? And also, coming up next, Kyler Murray. Yes to football. Making the right choice. Big 6, 1045 The Zone. Let it ride. Band of Heathens, Hurricane. The song is probably going to be really important to me for a long time. It's a Big 6 here on 104.5 Zone. I'm Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. 615-737-1045. Before we leave this Kareem Hunt story, John Dorsey was also the guy that drafted Tyreek Hill about a year after Tyreek pleaded guilty to punching and choking his pregnant girlfriend and kicking her in the stomach. And he showed a lot of remorse, but that cost him his college career for the most part at Oklahoma State. Dorsey doesn't have a problem bringing in trouble guys. And look, maybe he does believe in redemption and thinks this can work out. And I'm certainly not. Look, if Kareem Hunt gets back on the football field, I certainly hope that his life has turned around and that all the things that he has done make him a better person and all that. And I do believe in redemption, believe me. I don't know if I'm the one that's giving him his first chance back less than 5 months after this incident happened when the investigation is still ongoing. And Kareem Hunt's come out and been remorseful in his statement today, which of course he has. And John Dorsey, and this to me is sort of interesting, said that this is a zero tolerance policy. So I guess what that basically means is if he hits another girl, then that's going to be it for him in Cleveland. Tough situation. Now to something a little bit happier, a lot happier. It shouldn't be a surprise at this point. I think we all saw this coming. But Kyler Murray is going to play football. He's going to try his hand at the NFL draft. Here's the statement. Moving forward, I am firmly and fully committing my life and time to becoming an NFL quarterback. Football has been my love and passion my entire life. I was raised to play quarterback, and I very much look forward to dedicating 100% of myself to being the best quarterback possible and winning NFL championships. I've started an extensive training program to further prepare myself for upcoming NFL workouts and interviews. I eagerly await the opportunity to continue to prove to NFL decision makers that I am the franchise quarterback in this draft. That from Kyler Murray on social media earlier. So he's going to play football or he's going to try. A few weeks ago, maybe more than a few weeks ago, we talked about it on this show. And even Brandon Hagney came in, stepped in with me on a Friday night, and we talked about it a little bit. And this is what I expected him to do. And actually, it's what I said he should do. It's what Brandon said he should do, too. He's going to have to forego some MLB money, but he's going to be a high draft pick. Ian Rappaport, who comes on this radio station weekly on 3HL, said a little bit earlier today that not less than 2 months ago, not a single NFL executive believed that he would be a first-round pick. Today, many of them are saying top 10. You know what this sounds an awful lot like? Baker Mayfield, who many did not expect to be anywhere near the top 10. Not only was he in the top 10, he was in the top 5, the top 4, the top 3, the top 2, the top 1, because he was the number 1 draft pick off the board. Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, two of the most successful and accurate passers in the history of college football. There's no reason to think Kyler Murray's not going to be a top 10 draft pick. He's going to be a first rounder at worst. And when you look at the guaranteed money involved, it's going to be more than what he had to give up from the A's in order to chase this dream of making it in America's it sport rather than in the, well, one time it was really great. Now it's one of the four major sports in this country sports. And Murray really, I think, has reason to believe in himself. 70% passer at Oklahoma for Lincoln Riley. Think about Lamar Jackson last year. Far bigger risk because his ability to throw has always been the biggest question about him. Executives saying that a lot of guys that play quarterback throw, Lamar Jackson plays quarterback and hopes when he lets the ball leave his hand. I think that might have been Polian that said that. It seems that Baltimore decided we'll take the risk. They step up. They took him at the final pick of the first round on night one. Guaranteed money that night was $7.5 to $8 million for Lamar Jackson to be the final pick in the first round. And that's guaranteed money. And that's basically double what the A's gave him to go to the minors originally and try to earn his way to the majors. $4 million. We know that's a lot of money. We know baseball is a safer sport. But you've got to get to the show first. And that's the problem because that is really difficult. Kyler Murray gets drafted to an NFL team. He's in the building immediately. He's got a chance to compete for a starting job. Unless he's in Cleveland and Hugh Jackson is the coach. He plays the glamour position of that league. And the glamour position really in all of American team sports. He's a quarterback. He's also a mobile guy. But not just a mobile guy. As fast as he is, as much of an athlete as he is, he can straight up sling it. I already told you, a 70%+ completion percentage at Oklahoma. And then there's also another argument out there that is, look, if you're going to do the NFL thing, you better do it right now. Baseball maybe could still be an option for you conceivably in the future. Football will not be. You either go for broke now in the NFL, or that's going to become a wrap. You have got to strike right now if you're Kyler Murray. If it doesn't work, you might at least get another shot to try in baseball. I mean, look at Tim Tebow, for crying out loud. He was nowhere near the passer or the baseball player Kyler Murray is. He's doing all right for himself the last time I checked. It doesn't hurt that he's Tim Tebow, obviously, but it's not going to hurt that he's Kyler Murray either. And you got Cliff Kingsbury, who's got the number one pick with the Arizona Cardinals. He's raving about Kyler Murray to the extent that national media people today and for weeks suggest, look, they may take him number one and try to move Josh Rosen. Maybe the Giants would want Josh Rosen more than they would want Dwayne Haskins. Or maybe the Jaguars might want Josh Rosen. But Kingsbury could sell the idea, look, that was not my guy. Josh Rosen, maybe not the fit that we need. I think we have to take a Kyler Murray. I think that's kind of crazy, but it is a quarterback's league. And if you don't have the quarterback that you like, in many ways, you just don't have very much in the NFL. If I'm the Jags at 7, Kyler Murray, definitely something I'm considering. Bet on that rookie. That gives you more money to spend around him because of the way the contracts are structured, rather than trying to overpay for a veteran backup that might not pan out as a starter. We know John Gruden's out here casting loving Valentine glances at Kyler Murray. The Raiders pick at 4. Tampa Bay, Bruce Arians, maybe he's going to rebirth Jameis Winston's career. Some believe he will. They'll be better, I think. But maybe they're even a consideration at 5. The Giants at 6 might want Kyler Murray over Dwayne Haskins. I don't know. Denver, my Broncos, we still need a long-term answer. But the larger point here is that there are a handful of teams that desperately still need stability at the quarterback spot. And this is a very limited, very weak quarterback draft. Now, maybe all these guys are going to hit big for these franchises. But outside of Dwayne Haskins, who, by the way, is a pocket passer that is not a runner. Stephen A. Smith, I'm looking in your general direction. Have you ever watched Dwayne Haskins play sports? Do you know what he does? But Kyler Murray might be the one to bet on. I mean, look at the other guys. You got Duke's Daniel Jones. I have no idea. Cutcliffe's a wizard. Maybe Daniel Jones, who also seems to be able to throw it a mile, is Josh Allen 2.9. I don't know. Maybe he's Aaron Rodgers. We don't know. Drew Lock, maybe he's good, maybe he's not. Will Greer, I've seen flashes of brilliance. I've also seen flashes of the opposite. It's not exactly a loaded year for quarterbacks. And when you look at Baker Mayfield as a guide, you can start to talk about the size of Kyler Murray as well. And when we come back after this break, I'm going to go into Warren Sharp's kind of tweet storm that he put out today. I'm going to try to get Warren on later this week to talk about this more. He's the analytics guru of analytics gurus when it comes to football statistics in the NFL. And he has some very interesting things to say about short versus tall quarterbacks in the league. So I'm going to talk about that. And then I used to love this guy, and I don't know if I've ever been more wrong about an athlete in my life than Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is, somehow he's got to get out of his feelings. 615-737-1045. 737-1045 if you want to join this program. Kyler Murray's going to play football. Do you think it's going to work out? You can also tweet me at JMartZone. We'll be right back. It's the Big 6 on 104.5 The Zone. It's the Big 6. Rain is coming. I'm Jason Martin on Twitter at JMartZone, 615-737-1045. To join me, Ryan Mudd, my producer tonight, Chris Stapleton, Outlaw State of Mind, bringing us back in. Virginia, 9-point lead in Chapel Hill in the Dean Dome against North Carolina right now. That's a 4-versus-8 game. Nice little primetime Monday nighter. Feels a little Big Monday-ish. I remember Big Monday back in the day with the great Big East, the old Big East. A lot of times you can get ACC. I grew up in ACC territory, listening and watching Raycom and Jefferson Pilot Sports. But Virginia, after the 10-point loss to Duke on Saturday, swept by the Blue Devils this year, still only 2 losses, both of them to Duke. but they're in the lead by 7, 31-24 right now, that on ESPN. So I told you before the break about Warren Sharp. I'm going to try to have on. We've had him on before. I'm going to try to have him on before the end of the week at least, because he sent out some pretty interesting tweets today in regards to the perception of short versus tall quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of bringing them in and drafting them. Now, Baker Mayfield obviously showed up and did really nice work in Cleveland. But here's what Warren Sharp said. And he's at Sharp Football on Twitter. It's a really good follow, especially if you like serious nuance and a whole lot of statistics with your analytics. But the concerns about Kyler Murray are his height first, even though I think weight is the one you maybe need to pay more attention to, because he is very slight in his frame. But he's about 5'9 and 3 quarters, according to Oklahoma's SID. But this is an interesting argument. I'm just going to quote a few of his tweets here. Tall quarterbacks are preened, glorified, and idolized from an early age. Short quarterbacks get told how hard it will be and how they most likely won't make it. Every situation is unique, but there is something special about shorter quarterbacks with NFL talent, Breeze, Russ, Baker, and the chips they carry. Also, there's an element of laziness and comfort found in drafting a tall quarterback. Draft tall, you don't have to change your offense. Plus, if he fails, it's his fault because you drafted the prototype. Draft short, he could be harder to implement. Plus, you risk looking foolish for passing on the prototype. Diminutive quarterbacks don't get nearly as many chances to prove they have it. One or two small defects and a coach won't watch them. Meanwhile, a tall quarterback could have a ton of defects, but coaches, especially NFL coaches, think they can fix those defects and give them tremendous leeway in performance. All of that from Warren Sharp's Twitter. And then he goes on to list a fleet of tall guys drafted since 2013 at quarterback by height. 2'6", 7 guys. Paxton Lynch went 26th. Brock Osweiler, 57. 3'6", 6 guys. Mike Glennon, Nick Foles, Sean Mannion. 4'6", 5 guys. Carson Wentz. Then you get Blake Bortles at 3. Josh Allen at 7. And Zach Mettenberger at 178. E.J. Manuel also went early at 6'5", a year or two before that. And then he quotes Pat Shurmur. And by the way, all the guys I just mentioned, with the exception of Carson Wentz, and maybe if you want to put Nick Foles in there, but I still believe that dude's a backup, not all that good. A lot of them are about to be out of the league, or already are. One of them's playing in the AAF right now. But Pat Shurmur, this is kind of an incredible thing. He said, in 2018, he said this last year, I fancy guys that are tall. You're trying to find sight lines. It's no different for a quarterback when he's behind a very tall offensive line. All else being equal, as long as all the skill sets are equal or maybe even a little better than equal, guys that can see have a chance to be very good. That is quite a statement. Pat Shurmur in Minnesota coached Case Keenum, who was 6'1". To the most yards per attempt, second best touchdown percentage for a Vikings quarterback in the last 10 seasons. He was the shortest of the quarterbacks on the Minnesota Vikings roster that year. But basically said the ability to see, to be tall, to see over your offensive line and see over defenses is super important, which I do get that. But there is not a big history in this league, and you can go historically and look this up, at being 6'5 or taller and being good in the NFL at quarterback at all. Now, the guys that Warren Sharp listed as being small and having this chip on their shoulders, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, those are, well, we don't know about Baker Mayfield yet, but the other two are Hall of Famers in Russell Wilson and Drew Brees. Maybe Baker is going to be that as well. But that's a list of three. There haven't been many guys that you can even point to and make an example there, because many of them have never gotten a chance. And you have to wonder how many of them were talked out of even trying. Back to Sharp's point about how you're told from an early age, if you're not tall, you're not going to make it. Maybe you go play another sport. Maybe you do the other thing Kyler Murray decided not to do, which is go play baseball. And maybe you do it before you ever even play in college. Maybe we could have had more guys out here that were shorter that could have done this. But you're using some great examples here to try and illustrate that short quarterbacks can get it done. But I do like the idea of the chip on his shoulder. Baker Mayfield plays with a chip on his shoulder. Dude had to walk on. He was benched at Texas Tech by Cliff Kingsbury. We saw he never even got a chance to compete for the starting job in the offseason in Cleveland. They had to get rid of Hugh Jackson, as they should have, for malpractice. And you see how Baker feels about Hugh Jackson after the fact. Russell Wilson, ultimate competitor, also a two-sport athlete who chose football over baseball. Drew Brees had to leave San Diego and start a new career in New Orleans, where he's been, well, a Hall of Famer, one of the most accurate passers in the history of the NFL. Not a lot of short guys have gotten those opportunities, and I do think that that's interesting. Kyler Murray at 5'9", maybe you give him 5'10", but I'm giving him 5'9". The problem for Kyler Murray is he's thin. I don't know where that extra 40 pounds is going to come from. And it's got to be good weight on top of that. But he is frail, and that makes him a little bit more of a risk. Even if he can escape the pocket, if he takes a lot of hits, you don't know how much he's going to be able to hold up. But the height argument is going to be the knock against him no matter when he's picked. You're going to hear experts on that draft coverage, wherever it is, right here in Nashville, talking about, well, he can make all the throws. Maybe not quite as accurate as Baker Mayfield, but awfully accurate. But his slight frame concerns us. Can he hold up in this league? If he can, he can be really, really good. That's going to be the argument. You're already going to have a built-in excuse for Kyler Murray. But Kyler Murray is making the right decision to play football. If that's the sport that he wants to play, he can make more money, in my opinion, playing football in the short term than maybe he ever gets to make in Major League Baseball, because so few guys actually make big money in baseball, because you have to get to an elite level, which is by no means guaranteed, in order to actually cash in. Up next, Kevin Durant needs to shut up. It's the Big Six on 104.5 The Zone. Final segment of the Big Six tonight. Ball calls coming up. Number one team in the country. They'll play South Carolina on Wednesday night. You will hear that right here on 104.5. The Zona said I was going to tell Kevin Durant to quiet down. I'll get to that later in the week. I'm going to call an audible here for a couple of reasons. One is you should already be following Jonathan Hutton of the Midday 180, but he's at Hutton 104.5 if you're not. At 104.5, The Zone's the station website. Today began the official sort of campaign that's going to run through basically the end of April. As in, the hashtag is going to be Team Hutton 104.5. And I'll just read his tweet. I have a connection to blood cancer that recently affected our 104.5 The Zone family. Amanda Willis, wife of Brad, was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Hashtag Team Hutton 104.5 is dedicated to her and others fighting their own battle. We can all help. The website is Hutton1045.com. We are all in on this, folks. For Amanda and for everyone else out there, we need to beat this thing. I said that a few times when I was on Radio Row a couple of weeks ago to some guests that also had personal sort of ties to this. Merrill Hodge and Joe Andruzzi, who has a foundation, actually. It is a rare blessing and a real privilege to work for somebody that you would consider a great friend, that you don't just cash a paycheck because you happen to work underneath that person, but someone that supersedes that and is important in your life and whose family is important in your life. And Hutton felt that. We all felt that in this building. And Amanda continues to battle, and we are going to battle right along with her. And so Jonathan Hutton is going for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Man of the Year. And it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of events that he's going to be letting you know about. The Midday 180 is going to be a place where you're going to hear a lot of that stuff. He's going to join me on this show a little bit later on this week to talk about what he's doing as well. But whatever you can do to help, whether it's your time, whether or not it's a donation, we need to beat this thing. Whether or not we're able to do it in our lifetime, we need to set the stage for the next generation to be able to beat it. So instead of sitting here and making fun of Kevin Durant or whatever else, I would rather give that time to mention this. And again, follow Jonathan at Hutton1045. The website is Hutton1045.com. We're all going to be a part of this here in the building. We're all working for him. We're all going to try to raise money. We're all going to do whatever we can. The Man of the Year is cool and all. But he says, look, it's not about me winning Man of the Year. It's about us doing all that we can, raising as much money as we can, raising as much awareness as we can. And so that's what we're going to do. And I will spend time talking about it here on the Big Six as well. And hopefully, you know, thoughts and prayers to Hutton as he goes through this process, and to all of those around the country who are going for this honor. And Mickey Ryan's wife, Christina, is very actively involved, and she's really good at what she does and is really organized, works incredibly hard. And these people deserve recognition. And so we hope that millions get raised nationally, and we hope we're able to raise as much as we possibly can. And look, if we can make Jonathan Hutton Man of the Year, all the better. But everything that we do in the lead up to trying to get an honor that's more figurative than anything else, considering what's on the line, is a good thing. Just to go back to sports for a second, the AAF hit this weekend, and I don't know that there's actually a reason to watch the final season of Game of Thrones. Khaleesi, Cersei Lannister, Tyrion, Jon Snow, doesn't really matter, because the Iron Throne continues to belong to the sport of football in the United States. And luckily for HBO, it's not Westeros, because all the secrets would have been spoiled. The AAF debut this weekend, CBS drew 2.9 million viewers between 9 and 11 Eastern on Saturday night. That outperformed Rockets versus Thunder on ABC, which is a big-time NBA matchup. James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, that's three All-Stars, but the AAFs beat them. And you got Trent Richardson out there running. I want to tell you a quick story about this guy. Last January in Atlanta, I'm standing outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium following my work with Fox at the national championship game, Alabama-Georgia. Getting a car out of that place was a total nightmare. Got streets blocked off. It's just a total mess from an infrastructure perspective. It took forever because the drivers couldn't get to us because everything was blocked off. You could get an Uber or a Lyft, but it couldn't actually get to you. And it's raining and it's cold. So I'm out there standing at like 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m. It's cold. It's raining. There's a couple of dudes standing next to me. I'm not really paying attention to anything else going around for a few minutes. And then I hear them conversing. And then finally I look up for a second and I notice, hey, didn't I just see that dude in the Bama locker room? I'm standing next to Trent Richardson, who also can't get a car because our drivers can't get within about a half mile of us. And then I just start thinking of, man, that guy flopped so badly in the NFL after just being such a stud at Alabama. Here he is standing next to, of all people, me, after Bama's thrilling overtime comeback win, just trying to get a car away from the stadium. Saturday night, that same guy, Trent Richardson, two touchdowns for Birmingham of the AAF. Former number three overall pick in the NFL. Just 56 yards, but the big point here is that this dude's career was over. And he's got a little bit of a second life. And if you go back and you remember the XFL, Tommy Maddox got another shot in the league, the NFL, because he performed pretty well in the XFL. There were a few other guys that were success stories out of that league. If you go back to Kyler Murray, who we've talked about a lot this hour, let's say it doesn't work in the NFL, maybe the AAF or the XFL could be there for him. And they will kill themselves to get him there because that's a big-time ratings boom. And it's possible people are just going to tune right back out after this weekend. But some of these names, you got the Spurriers of the world, intrigue behind these guys, games featuring a lot of things to like. Looks like it's going to be hard-hitting and violent, which is going to bring some criticism, but it definitely differentiates the AAF from the NFL. Some of these rules, I really like them. The play clock, how fast these things are moving. The football itself was pretty good, all things considered. The XFL's first week was brutal. The play was bad. The games were bad. The production values were bad. Here you had decent announce work. You had good innovations. You had guys playing hard. You got Spurrier out here running trick plays to win 40-6. And then making fun of the Redskins in his postgame comments because he's Steve Spurrier. Could this actually work? We don't know. But the idea that it took down a primetime NBA game on national television, interesting. We're going to have to pay attention. And now the next smart step is going to be maybe try and coax a Trevor Lawrence or a Tua out of college early, or go grab a Johnny Manziel or a Tim Tebow or these big glitzy college stars that didn't translate in the NFL long term, and just go full entertainment and full interest on those guys. I don't know whether or not the AAF is going to work long term, but in the short term, looks like a success, because the answer to the question, does America need more football, according to America, would seem to indicate yes. Although the XFL did over a 9 rating when it first debuted, and I think a lot of that was pro wrestling fans giving it a shot because WWF was red hot at that point in time. But there's definitely some intrigue here. This was not a flop by any stretch of the imagination. And we will continue to cover the AAF as it continues to go through its inaugural season. We don't have as much time as I thought we were going to have on the way out, but David Williams, of course, passed away on Friday, tragically. We devoted much of our time in the afternoon once that news was made public to discussing that. And on the way out the door, rather than talk about anything else, I just want you to hear from, let's hear from Derek Mason. We had a couple of different cuts, as both Tim Corbin and Derek Mason were on 3HL earlier. Won't be able to play them both. Maybe we can play Corbin tomorrow. But here's Derek Mason on one of his fond memories of David Williams.
You know, I mean, the thing that sticks out most to me was probably my first year. You know, it's been a tough season. A tough first season, a lot of unmet, unkept expectation. And David brought me in after the season, and he just sat me down, and he said, where do we go from here? And he was very matter-of-fact. And, you know, I hadn't thought about it. I hadn't had a chance to digest the season. But what he really wanted me to do was, you know and understand that decisions had to be made. Okay, man, right then, decisions had to be made. And what were they? And he let me think on it. And I came back the next day, and I said specifically where we needed to go and what it looked like. And from that moment on, I knew once I had made some decisions, I knew he was 100% behind me and with me. He wanted me to stand up and put down, the little boy toys and stand up and stand for this program the way he had stood for me. And that was important because that was a true growing moment for Derek Mason as a head coach. Not Derek Mason as a former coordinator, but Derek Mason as a head coach. And I think, you know, for me, that probably sticks in my mind because those decisions allowed me to try to move this program forward in ways that needed to happen at that particular time.
Derek Mason, good man. David Williams, good man. He will be missed. Vol Calls is next. Good night.